Hi, this is Darling Love, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Hey, Mike, John Mathis.
Hey, John, how are you?
I'm okay, thanks. It's Johnny Mathis, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Hello, everybody. This is Charles Wright from the Watts 103rd Street Rhythm Band. And you're listening to my good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, this is Mike Miller, and you're here with me on the Harmony Street Show, and it's my pleasure to have as my guest a man who contributed to every decade of our genre of music, R&B legend, Mr. Charles Wright. How you doing, Charles?
I'm doing fine, Mike.
That's great. It's such a pleasure to have you on because I know you touched so many things, and we're going to talk about all of them. You were born where, Charles?
In Mississippi Delta.
Oh, okay.
Out in the middle of the cotton patch.
Right.
Little town called Clarksville.
I understand that. And let's go back to the beginning. When you were a kid, you know how our parents play music in the house or on the radio, and all of us as little kids have certain things that we gravitate to. What was your ear telling you when you were a little guy? You must have been listening to something that made you smile.
Unfortunately, we were not allowed to listen to anything except for spiritual music.
Ah, okay. Interesting.
Until I was, I guess about 14, 15.
Right.
I lost this where I first heard R&B music and got stuck on it.
By that time, I know that your family moved to L.A. at one point, to California.
When I was 12, yes.
Right. Okay. And so then you kind of got hooked on the R&B sound.
A little later, yeah, I started running with the kids from coming home from school, and they'd all be singing these songs, and I started listening to the Herman Hancock radio show, and he would play all of the greatest R&B music that was out and coming out in those days.
You know, in addition to what I did, I was a dean in the Bronx, in a tough junior high school in the Bronx, and Jimmy Keys from the Chords, you know, who wrote Shaboom, I had his kids. He had them a little bit later in life, and I had two of his boys, and they weren't great kids, so Jimmy was in my office a lot, and he would come and speak to the auditorium, and he would tell us the whole story about how he wrote Shaboom, and they were on the R&B charts, but the white groups covered it and made all the money. And he did pretty much die penniless, but...
Their version was the best version could ever be made.
No, I understand. And you know, that was the deal, because, you know, all of these R&B groups who really paved the way for everybody, you know, they didn't really get in their pockets and get the attention that they deserved.
Yeah, but Shaboom was one of the first biggest R&B records ever. Earth Angel and Shaboom broke down the barrier.
I do know that. And I do know that there's a group running around now called the Chords, and I gotta get into them and call them up and find out like how they just stumbled upon it.
I don't believe any of the Chords are alive. It might be, but they were right on the edge of the beginning of this stuff.
Right. Well, I know that Carl Pfister, you know, passed away, and I know that Jimmy Keys is gone. Let's get back.
Oh, man, you knew those guys. That's great.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, they were Bronx guys, you know, and I was a Bronx. I grew up in Westchester in Connecticut, and I'm living in Florida now. But I did, for some reason, happen to be in the right place at the right time a lot of times and had a little fun that way. So here you are in L.A., and you're listening to R&B. When did you realize that you had this talent musically? Because I know you play guitar and piano and have these great vocals. When did you realize that you had this talent?
Man, it wasn't until after the first day I went to high school. I went to a school called Manual Arts, and I did all my orientation, and then I went to have lunch.
Right.
And I sat up at this outside lunch counter. I had bought some spaghetti and a roll, I remember. And I sat down to eat it, and I heard something like I never heard before.
Wow.
So I got up from my ears to behind one of those bungalows, and there was a group back there called the Youngsters.
Right.
And they were practicing a cappella.
Right.
And man, I had never seen or imagined anything like that.
Wow.
It was so beautiful. This group eventually made a record called Dreamy Eyes. I don't know if you remember that.
I'd be in ecstasy.
I know that feeling, man. It just takes you over when you hear that harmony and it's tight.
Yeah, man. After a while, I kept going back every day. But they'd be rehearsing there all the time and they have a little crew of people standing around listening to them.
Yep.
I started going back every day. Some told me, you ought to be doing this too. I had no idea how to do it, but I knew that's something I wanted to do. That's when I first became enthralled with this stuff.
I understand. But, you know, really and truly, when I started to get into your background, I mean, you touched so many great groups. And you know, most guys, you know, they sing with one group, they stay a short time, they do this, they do that. But looking at your history, I mean, you touched so many groups that had so much great stuff. I mean, you know, you were either lucky and in the right place at the right time, or everybody wanted you.
Well, I don't know how long that was, but I just kept, you know, I was with several groups, you know. And when the first group fell apart, I mean, I was with them at least 2 or 3 years and didn't want it to fall apart, just fell apart. Then I ended up with another group and had a big record. They fell apart. And I ended up with another group. It fell apart.
Well, let's see if we can go through it. The very first group that you joined was which group?
Actually, the first thing that happened to me was I ran into Jesse Belden, who was my greatest influence.
Uh-huh.
He, not just mine, he influenced everybody in L.A. almost.
Wow.
He was the greatest thing that ever happened. Well, he told me about a guy who had a studio not too far from where he lived. And I was trying to get my first group together after I listened to the group on campus. I went by there and asked the man, could I bring my group when we got it together to audition? He said, yeah. So a few months later, I took my group over there, and we auditioned. And he didn't have a professional studio in there. That was just basically his headquarters. But he was taking us on a little two-track tape recorder. My cousin sang like a songbird. He sang the first two songs. And after that, I got up to sing. And I started singing. And he said, hold it, hold it, hold it. Listen, brother, don't you try and sing. You all stay in the background. As long as you live, you stay in the background. Don't you? So I felt so bad. So I went, there's a tunnel not far from my house. I used to go in and practice just to hear the echo. You know how we used to do with the groups?
Oh, yeah.
All right, so I went in that tunnel night after night and night, and I come up with this song, and I went over to his studio one night by myself and played that song and sang it. He said, oh, no, you're not the same guy. No. I said, I couldn't have done that. He said, man, next time I record something, I'm going to take you in the studio and record you.
Wow.
And so he had a session for some other guy, but they had 15 minutes left, and they gave me the last 15 minutes
wow.
to sing my songs. And that's when I recorded. And I was recorded under the name of Little Charlie Wright.
Uh-huh.
But then the product sat on his floor for about a year, and then a disc jockey named Huggy Boy came in and heard my song and said, this is a hit, but we have to put a group name to it because they put in one person named Ain't Style right now. So they put the group Twilighters. So that all became part of the Twilighters.
Gotcha. Those were the Twilighters, and of course, now, what were some of the things that the Twilighters recorded?
Well, the main record we had, which was Huggy Boy, the guy, this guy I'm talking about,
right.
he made a smash called Eternity, but
right.
It was only regional, it wasn't all over the country, I don't think,
right.
But Eternity by the Twilighters is a big record.
Time.
you were telling me that the Twilighters, as most groups, you know, they don't last forever. So I guess at one particular point, the Twilighters all looked at each other and said, okay, we're done.
Yeah, kind of dispersed after a few years, 2 or 3 years.
Okay, and then from there, what was the next endeavor?
I got involved with a group called the Galahads.
Mm-hmm.
And the Galahads had a size, it actually was like number 60s or something like that, top 40. Then I wrote 2 songs for them that was going very well.
Uh-huh.
And Dick Clark was playing and everything, but we had a problem with Alan Freed,
right.
Who, anyway, it's a long story there. So we, that kind of broke our group up.
Wow.
It was the best group I'd ever been with.
Come closer to me. Right now. know my own heart, and it's easy. Busted. Come on, tell me about the thing, the claim you feel. I got to know, is it real? Is it real? Is it real? Oh, baby, I just want to know.
Yeah, but that's the way it goes. Anyway, when that happened, the owner of the record company that was dealing with Delphi Records asked me to stay on as his A&R director.
Right.
I hadn't even thought of doing nothing like that. But I took the job, and so I produced this record on a group called Little Caesar and the Romans.
Right, I remember them.
Yeah, Oldie But Goodies remind me of you.
I certainly remember that. Everybody does.
Okay. So we had a bargain, but When that happened, the owner of the company didn't really want to share the money with me, so
yeah.
I left there. And while I was there, though, I used to go out scouting for talent, and I saw a band called the La La Wilson Band.
We're 1,000 miles apart, but I'll keep you in my heart. You know I love you from the start. We have to part. I long to hold you tight, kiss you day and night. You're 1,000 miles apart. I pray to heaven up above, protect the girl I love. I will wait for your return, but my heart'll ever yearn. Baby, please come back to me and end this misery. Just can't keep from crying. We're 1,000 miles apart.
Eight people on the stage, all dressed nice, doing routines, playing instruments. I said, well, this is what I really want to do. So I decided to start me a band. And that's how my band got started.
Wow.
Started with only four people, and we would only add people on when somebody come along, and they keep coming back, want to sit in with us and jam with us, and they really understood what we was doing, and we hired them. So we ended up with 9 people at one point, and that became the Watts 103rd Street Rhythm Band.
Well, before we go to that, and I know how much success you had with that, I have a lot of doo-wop fans, you know, that listen to this as well. You spent some time with the Shields. Now, you sang with them, and
I sang with them, and I had to become their leader because the lead singer didn't have a leadership quality.
Wow.
So I ended up leading that group until it fell apart. You know, you have hit records. If you don't have another one after a while, you're out of here. And basically, that's what happened.
Wow. So you cheated, you lied. You were with them at that point, right?
Yes.
Wow. I mean, you know, and we know how big that record is. I mean, that's on, when they put out the lists of the all-time doo-wop favorites, You Cheated, You Lied is always on the list.
Oh, it is?
Absolutely.
Okay, I didn't even know that.
Oh, yeah, big, big tune, You Cheated. I mean,
¶¶ cheated, you lied, you said that you loved me. You cheated, you lied, you said that you want me. Oh, what can I do but just keep on loving you? Love is something you know nothing about. Love is something you can't know about. So please try to love me. Love me like I love you. Oh, please try to love me. Love me like I love you. You cheated, you lied, you said that you want me. You cheated, you lied, you said that you love me. Oh, what can I do? Oh, what can I do?
And what's funny is that, you know, everybody's doing all the big oldie shows now because I produce some of them, and I go to them, I produce them, and I'm involved with them and everything else. And there were certain groups, you know, going way back that people would love to see, but, you know, they're not around anymore for some reason.
Yeah.
You know?
Things happen.
Yeah.
The guy who sang Lean on You Cheated, beautiful singer.
Right.
Frank Irvin.
Right. Right.
Frank Irvin now has like dementia. So, I mean,
yeah, well, that's true of a lot. Now, let me ask you this. Being out in California at that time, did you ever do any shows with the Calvanes?
Oh, yeah, I know the Calvanes very well.
They had some pretty good tunes.
Yeah.
I know the very matter of fact, I used one of them on the background of one of my songs about a year ago.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wow, that's great.
Herman Pruitt.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly right. So you're doing A&R for Delphi, and all of a sudden now you have a situation in front of you, and it becomes the Watts Band. Why don't you start at the beginning and tell me that story? Because it's a long saga, but it's a great story.
Well, that started. Actually, I started off the group. Name of the group was Charles Wright and the Wright Sounds.
Okay.
And through that group came many people. At one time, we had Barry White on drums. We had, for about a year or two, we had a Daryl Dragon from Captain and Tennille in that band.
Right.
The greatest drummer in L.A. today was recession drummer James Gaston was in that band.
Right.
The guitar player who really was a stable sound for Earth, Wind, and Fire, Al McKay, he came through this band. And other people did, I can't even mention. But anyway, we ended up, after a while, I basically became a studio musician,
uh-huh.
a guitarist. So I was playing in the studio every day, all day. And at night, we was playing at a nightclub in Hollywood, my band was. While I was in the studio one day with the studio band, in walks Bill Cosby and a guy named Fred Smith. And Mr. Cosby's going to now... He's gonna start singing and do a singing at CD,
uh-huh.
a singing single actually.
Right.
So they came in and stayed all day. They loved us. They left. We're gonna use the guys we're gonna use. So about 2 weeks later, we're in there recording this song called "Little Old Man" with Bill Cosby. I don't know if you ever heard it.
I think so.
Step and a tear kind of
Actually, Stevie Wonder's up tight with Bill Cosby rapping over top of it. But we made a real funky track of that, and it became a hit record. It came to the top 20. Then he wanted to make an album. So we made a couple of albums with Mr. Cosby, became his backup band, and they gave us the name, the Watts 103rd Street Rhythm Band.
Wow.
Which is a name that was invented by Fred Smith, the guy who was producing Cosby.
Gotcha.
So that's how the Watts 103rd Street Rhythm Band came to be. We started doing tours to Warner Brothers would send us out on tours, and we started doing tours to promote the music, and eventually people, I was the singer of the group, and people started demanding that I do something singing, because first the music was all instrumental.
Gotcha.
So then when I started singing, our first record was Do Your Thing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. As a matter of fact... Supposedly did a jingle for KGFJ Radio, and in that group was James Carmichael, Leon Haywood, and Bobby Womack. Is that true?
It's very true.
Wow.
Friend Honey is the name of the record, and it's a very fine record.
like I said, you either were, in those days, and all through your career, a very, very talented guy, or you were always in the right place at the right time.
Well, you can be there if you want. If you don't have any talent, it doesn't matter.
Because you've rubbed up against an awful lot of good people, you know.
Yeah, and I'm thankful for that, man. You know, I'm really thankful. And I'm thankful for Express Yourself. Yeah, I'm so thankful for that. Oh. I never dreamed. Brother, I probably shouldn't talk about it yet. Maybe you don't want to. But
yeah, we're going to talk about it. But that is the type of universal sound and universal hook that will live forever. And you know, when you come up with something like that, it's really monumental. But we will talk about that. I want to go through it all. Spreading Honey, that tune. Tell me about that tune.
Song you're talking about, that was a commercial for the Magnificent Montague's radio show.
Right, right, right. And
his theme for him to come on.
Right.
And became so popular, people demanded they'd have it to dance to. And so they put it out as a single.
Let me ask you something. Moving along, you know, the second version of the Watts Band, you know, Bill Cosby and yada yada. Now, being out in California, you were with ABC at that point?
I was with ABC after Warner Brothers.
With ABC, did you run into at any time Dennis Lambert from Lambert and Potter?
Yeah, they wrote a lot of stuff. They wrote some stuff for the Four Tops.
Exactly. Yeah. All the Tavares stuff. Well, Dennis is a good friend of mine.
Oh, okay.
And I figured if you were out in L.A. and you were there at that time, you must have run into a couple of these guys.
Yeah, I ran into the songwriting team.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Dennis lives near me down here in southern Florida, and he's still very active and he's still doing his thing. So it's kind of like you. Once you have it and you have that creativity, you never let go of it.
Yeah, well, give him my best regards when you see him.
Oh, absolutely I will. Absolutely. You recorded an album called Together.
That was, the Watts 103rd Street Rhythm Band. Yes.
Now, that was really the first album because, you know, in reading the background material, it seemed that it took a while until you settled in, you know, with the guys that became the solid group. There were guys coming and going. So what was going on in those days?
Well, no, the first two albums, I think, that the group recorded, it was actually that studio band, I'm telling you, I used to work with one of the studio bands.
Gotcha.
Playing the music. It was only about 2 years into that venture that they started allowing me to sing and record. That's when Do Your Thing started that year. Yeah, before that, everything was instrumental just about, and a lot of them were the copy tunes.
So Smith had control of the whole thing, and then all of a sudden the situation became yours and yours alone.
But he sold it to Warner Brothers.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and Warner Brothers, I think, felt it was a good marketing tool. They had tried to get into the R&B business for a long time.
Right.
And they couldn't.
Right.
They tried like Tina and a few other people. They saw us as a way to break into the R&B field, I guess, and that's what we did for them.
Right, and so, like, all of a sudden, you're a long way from doo-wop.
Yeah, but I didn't realize. I mean, it was all the same to me, actually. You know, I think about that sometime now. It actually was all the same to me. I mean, I was just loving playing music and loving to be able to play music.
No, I hear you, and I say it kiddingly because basically the groups of the 70s, you know, when you talk about the Spinners and the Intruders and the Manhattans, you know, really and truly, they were just singing the extension of the doo-wop harmony, you know, and taking it to the next level with a little more bass and a little more, a little more organ, you know. And because, you know, a lot of these groups that, that all of a sudden you saw on Soul Train that were doing that funky, sound, most of those groups started on the street corner and then just changed with the times during the 70s, because I know that for a fact. You know,
that's true.
You know?
Yeah, that's true. But we had to, you know, because, I mean, for instance, Love Land was a doo-wop song that the guy brought to me. And I knew I had to come up with something different than doo-wop with it. In order to get over, so I created a new sound in that process.
Tell me now, that's in the jungle, in the jungle, babe. There was a song on there called Comment.
Comment, yeah.
Tell me about that song.
They say that's my best song.
Uh huh.
And it's been done by a lot of people, including Ray Charles.
Right.
Delores.
But that was a song with a message. And what year was that? Do you remember?
I think that was 1971.
Watch out for your friend. Though they lose in the end, sometimes they'll try to make it sin. But what is a man without a friend? We all live within a game. Excuse has many names. Where true friends rarely come. Can't afford to lose one. Jealousy, and I recall, it's always been man's hardest fall. To conquer fear, oh, it's quite a quest. Till we do, never rest. Child was born yesterday. Nothing but an innocent baby. Somebody sow a bit of seed. Can he grow a bit of weed? Listen, society, how can you teach? I want to know. You don't practice. See if we can get everybody to say it this evening. All men are truly brothers.
but hate. There's nothing left. It's made me your only yourself.
Yeah, because in 71, they weren't coming out with too many tunes that had a message in it, or that, you know, that were like a serious message tune. There were only a few of them, you know. It's funny, I'm friendly with Cuba Gooding Sr., and because he was from the Bronx, and I had his kids, too. you know... He just recorded a tune, and he's still hanging in there, Cuba Gooding, and he just recorded a tune that is the same kind of a political message tune. The problem with it is it's like an 8-minute tune or a 9-minute tune. I say, Cuba, who's going to play this?
Oh, yes, long.
And if you've ever spoken to Cuba Sr.,
I know him.
Yeah, you say, how you doing, Cuba? And then you have to shut up for about 15 or 18 minutes because it's mostly him talking.
Like Bob Womack saying, was the same way.
So if you know Cuba, then you know that to be true, because they say, hey man.
Yeah, absolutely true.
I interviewed him and I asked him one question and he went on for about an hour and 10 minutes. And I said to him, why don't you just record this and mail it to me, man? You don't need me. and he laughed, because I'll tell you a funny story. I had his grandkids in my school, Michael and Cristalia Gooding, and I won't tell you the story behind it, but he said to me, you know, me being the dean, he says, you were a big part of our lives, you know, because I worked very closely with his kids. They weren't doing so well, you know. And and I said, and I had Cuba Jr. in the office and the brother. And I said, you know what, man, you're out winning an Oscar in Hollywood and you're out doing your Everybody Plays the Fool and whatever. I says, and you're not paying attention to your grandkids because they're not doing good. Oh, man, we're going to fix it. He says, so you know what happened? I don't think they ever fixed it. So there you go.
Oh, hi, this is Cuba Gooding. And you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
But anyway, that's another whole story. A direct quote from you. You said that your music is somewhere in between Otis Redding and James Brown. Somewhere right in the middle.
That's not my quote.
Well, maybe that was somebody who...
There's someone who Warner Brothers hired to write album credits for one of my albums.
Really and truly, you probably worked with everybody in the business for as many things as you've touched. I'm sure you did the Don Cornelius thing. Were you guys on Soul Train at that point?
It's the second Soul Train show ever to be done.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because I think I remember you guys being on Soul Train at that point. You know.
I was so inspired by the Soul Train theme.
Wow. Wow. And, you know, I mean, Soul Train evolved because at the beginning it was just the train was a little cardboard cutout in the back. And then all of a sudden it became, over the years, it became this big graphic and they, you know, it's like the budget became bigger and bigger and bigger, you know.
Yeah, it was a good show to have. America Learned How to Dance.
Oh, absolutely.
Shame on you. That's a fantastic song, and needless to say, it's one of many great songs in your new album, and I'd like to congratulate you on it.
Thank you very much.
You're doing all of the writing and producing in the album?
Yes, I am.
And what's that title, 90 Day Cycle People, about?
Well, it's one of the songs in the album. It's about it's kind of a science fiction song about people who were born to live only 90 days, and they didn't have time for all the bull that we go through. They lived real peaceful and happy
bull,
life.
Bull, what is that?
They didn't have time for wars and, you know, all the calamity we go through. So everybody was happy and peaceful, lived a happy life. Mm-hmm. And nobody stepped on nobody's toes.
Yeah. That's a beautiful idea. Charles, it's a pleasure to have you with us, and we look forward to seeing you again real soon. Huh?
It's always my pleasure, Don.
Okay. How about a gang for Charles Wright?
If I'm not too mistaken, the Shalimar group, those were a bunch of soul trained dancers that got together and started singing together. They were dancers from the show and everything. All right, so let's move ahead. Tell me, because I know you're dying to tell me about this, the Express Yourself album. How did that come about? And tell me what inspired you to get into that.
Well, we were performing at Texas A&M one night, and we actually was performing Do Your Thing. And when it ended, it just stopped. It always stopped abrupt, you know.
Right.
And the kids kept stomping and clapping. I don't know what made me say it. I just, before I knew it, I said, "Express Yourself."
Wow.
And they went, "Wow." I said it a couple of times, so they expressed themselves in such an exuberant manner. I decided, well, this is going to be my next song. So I went to the hotel that night, and I started writing it, and got off the train about 12 o'clock the next day in L.A., and I had finished.
Wow.
Express yourself. Express yourself. You don't never need help from nobody else. All you got to do now, express yourself. Whatever you do, whatever you do, 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 long, long, do it good, all right. It's not what you look like when you're doing what you're doing. It's what you're doing when you're doing what you look like you're doing. Express yourself. Express yourself. Do it!
others. Brace yourself, brace yourself, brace yourself, brace yourself. Walk love.
Well, you know, see, a lot of tunes grow out of a jam, you know? You're up there jamming and killing time and whatever, and all of a sudden everybody gets creative, and you open your mouth, and out comes this hook.
Yeah.
You know?
But it didn't strike a lot of people right. Because not even my horn section, they didn't want to play them.
Huh.
I brought the track home. Then on Sunday, brought home on Monday, had them come over, and then some of them said, man, this ain't nothing, we don't want to play all this.
Huh.
And I had to threaten them to go get some of my old studio buddies, so they grumbled and they played it. Then the president of the record company, he didn't like it.
Huh.
And the first disc jockey, when it came out, we were playing in a club in Detroit, and the disc jockey owned the club. So I had the first two copies sent over to the club, and he opened it that night, went in his office and played, and came out and said, I think you made a mistake this time, Charles. He said, I might play it because you guys are doing such a good job for me and my club here, but I don't think so.
Wow.
I ran to him 20 years later at a convention in a hotel room. Hey, man, I told you it was going to be smashed in there.
Yeah, right. Wow. Well, you know, I'll tell you, that's how the music business is. You know what I'm saying? You never know. But look, how many times do you hear a group, they went out and they cut a record and they had, here's the A-side, man, and everybody's playing it, and one guy turns it over and they have smash hit with the B-side. The A-side never gets heard. And everybody found out that they were going in the wrong direction. So, you know, and you know, when it happens like that, it's because it was meant to happen. Because that tune was meant to happen because it came out at a time when nobody expected it. The creativity came out when nobody expected it. Because you could sit down and try to write a hit and maybe not get there. But the ones that come out naturally are the ones that are supposed to be there, I think.
That's the way God works.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that, of course, had a life of its own. And here
it still has a life of its own.
Oh, yeah.
Bigger than I am.
Here you are. You're in the company of all the great groups. I mean, you know, one of the best groups that I ever saw in concert was Earth, Wind, and Fire.
The greatest group ever been, Earth, Wind, and Fire.
That's when Maurice White was still with the group. It was Radio City. It was the second week when they got all the kinks out of the sound system. And I got tickets from the vice president of Radio City, gave me his second row center seats. And you know, I will tell you that for the entire 90 or plus minutes, nobody in that group stopped moving for one second. They all moved every minute of the show with the vocals. You know, Phil Bailey was in the group. Maurice was in the group. And it was a really happening thing. When you hear their vocals live and they cop what they did on the record right in front of you live, you go, oh, my God, oh, my God.
Yeah, they're great. The greatest thing ever happened. They had 11 years straight triple platinum that they know about.
Yep.
Yeah, ain't nobody ever done that.
Right. But, you know, once again, you know, reading some of the liner notes, they say, you know, of course, the Watts Group, you know, reminiscent of Sly, the Isleys, Parliament Funkadelic, Earth, Wind, and Fire. So, you know, your chops were right in there with all the big-time guys. So, you know, it's like...
Except for Sly Stone, my group inspired all of them.
Right.
Including Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Right? No, I do understand. Now, Maurice used to play with Ramsey Lewis, if I remember, at the beginning.
Yeah, they used to open the show for us.
Isn't that something? Well, but he always had that stuff going on in his head, but probably because he was, like, watching you.
Well, I'm one of the people who's watching, I know that, but, I mean, I can't take nothing from Maurice. He's a great talent.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, the whole band, his brother, the bass player, he's a terrible bass player. He is fantastic.
Right.
And Al McKay, who comes from my group, he's great.
Right.
Guitar. Oh, the whole band is fantastic.
Right.
Philip's got a voice, man. I got more respect for Philip. I saw him sing at Ray Charles' funeral.
Right.
Oh, man. He was much better than he is on those records.
Wow.
Yes. I think it was Ray Charles' funeral, I think it was. I saw him. Yeah. And he really impressed me.
Now, very interesting, you know, I know Gene Chandler, who did Duke of Earl, and, you know, I've been to a lot of shows with him, and he does the Duke thing, but a lot of people don't know that he was also had a whole bunch of tunes later on during the 70s in that R&B vein, sang with the Impressions and whatever, whatever. So I'm wondering if you ran across him doing that more of an R&B thing later on.
No, the only time I ever ran into him is we were working at a club here called Guys and Dolls in the 60s.
Uh-huh.
And they had guys come in, other people come in and perform on the show.
Right.
On weekends sometimes. And they had him over there one weekend.
Right.
And he worked with us one weekend. That's the only time I really ever ran into him.
Because I never knew it, but there's that song, Groovy Situation, because it's a groovy situation, a perfect time, and you know, that was him, and I never knew it. I never realized it.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, that was Gene Chandler. I mean, that's a long way from Duke of Earl. He also did a lot of cuts with the Impressions, you know, and, you know, I thought to myself, very interesting. But I never really connected the two.
Yeah, no, I never connected him with the Impressions.
He filled in, you know, a lot with the Impressions, you know. So, now, just going through, you did an awful lot of recording.
Yeah.
I'm looking at some of this stuff. Rhythm and Poetry.
Yeah.
You know, Doing What Comes Naturally.
Those albums, yes.
Yeah, 90 Day Cycle People. Now, what's that all about? That's a heck of a title.
Have you ever heard it?
I have not. No, that's one I haven't heard.
You really should listen to it.
No, and I will do that.
It's about people living on a planet that they only have 90 days to live. So they're on top of all the junk we go through.
Stories about people who were born to live only on a 90-day cycle. And because they live such a short while, everything sort of speeded up for them, you know. Now through their eyes, they could see about 1,000 times more in depth than we do now. They could feel things that we feel magnified by 3,000 times. They could actually stand anywhere and see the sun moving through the sky, the stars moving in their formation. Build as he can, trees sprouts and little children grow. Now the 90-day cycle people had quick and flashing eyes, darting from here and there. They could see the wind that stirred through the sky. There appeared to be
everybody was really real. Mine was all big and small, I worked in the field. Nobody's trying to be boss, nobody got time to play the card. Nobody's trying to be bigger than the other, cause after 90 days you just couldn't go no further. Talk about the 90 day cycle, people.
That's just by this woman, she gives me encouragement, and I appreciate it.
Finally got it right.
Uh-huh.
So did you finally get it right that time?
If I didn't, I did the next album or so. I think I did.
Yeah, and you did a you updated Express Yourself. You did a different version of that on that album, right?
Yes, I did.
As that song lives and lives, I mean, it's just amazing. And you know, what's really funny is that a lot of times I'll speak to somebody that was so embedded in the genre and did so many things, and I always say to them, so, are you going to write the book? So, you know, I can ask you that question, but I guess you've already thought about writing the book.
Yeah, my book will be out on my birthday, which is April 6th.
Wow. Tell me about the book.
It's about my life basically as a child in the Mississippi Delta.
Uh-huh.
And my family and what we went through there. Yeah. And that's what basically that book is about. I couldn't cram my whole life into one book, so I wrote that book for that era. And I got another book that's coming out. My next book would be about my career.
Right. Now, the name of the book is Up From Where We've Come.
Yes.
Right. And so, you know, okay, so that's going to be, I guess, the first part of the trilogy.
Yes.
And then what we're going to do is, you know, after you finish the third one, we're going to sell it to HBO or Netflix, and you're going to become rich all over again.
Man, you got some good plans, man.
Yeah, well, you know what? If not you, then who?
All right.
You know, bring back the harmony, because, you know, I love, you know, me as a kid, you know, when my parents were listening to Patti Page and listening to, you know, whoever they listened to, Sinatra.
Yeah, I know, remember the days.
I always found the R&B group harmony groups, you know, I was listening to the Chords and the Nutmegs and the Whispers and the Flamingos. That's who I was listening to, because I would tell my parents, no, I want that station, you know. And so I was always into the harmony. And when I learned how to play guitar, you know, I nowadays I arrange harmony for groups and all of that stuff. So bring back the harmony is something that I understand. Tell me about that.
Well, that's a documentary I did. That harmony back in that era, and it basically was mostly four chords.
Right.
But it was the most beautiful thing, it's the most simple thing, and it brought about a lot of changes in society. Then we went to, from there to distortion and cussing and drum machines.
Right.
And we lost our beautiful beginnings.
Exactly.
And if we don't turn around, it looks like it's headed all off in the wrongest direction it could go. So, and then the kids in the ghettos here, they're not getting into education. I never see a black child with an instrument anymore.
Wow.
And so, nobody knows how to play anything anymore. They take everything from everybody else, and they rip them off, and they manipulate the stuff through machinery.
Right.
And it ain't really music. It's an assimilation of music. I want us to bring back the harmony.
Well, you know, that, to me, is...
You know, we got our attitude has to change. Otherwise, we head off into nowhere. No, I mean, that's in my opinion.
No, but you're exactly right, man. That group harmony sound is great. And that's not to say, I mean, you know, then I got a little more sophisticated as I went, you know. Four chords can still be a major seventh, a minor, and then the diminished, you know what I mean? So, but you still got four chords, you know, as you start to get a little bit sexy with the chord pattern. But, you know, I agree with you 100% and there's another thing. And you experienced this when you were younger. Hitting tight harmony with four or five guys, you know, when it rang, when it was really good, that was spiritual, man.
That was, it is. Absolutely.
You know.
And that's what I'm talking about. They're taking the spirituality out of music, except for you gotta go to church to hear it, otherwise you don't hear it. Yeah, and it's been playing off his axis, for as I'm concerned.
That's right. Jesse Belvin would not like it.
Oh, no. Oh, no. It would be torture.
So, when you were with the Watts Band, did you once in a while turn around and do a Jesse Belvin tune?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I still do Jesse Belvin. I recorded The Night My Love in one of those CDs you mentioned, I think, or one of these.
Cool.
Pleasant dreams, sleep tight, my love. May tomorrow be sunny and bright, and bring you closer to me. Before you go, there's just one thing I'd like to know. Is your love still warm for me, or has it grown cold? If you should awake in the still of the night, please tonight, my love. May tomorrow be sunny and bright and bring you closer to me.
I actually recorded that on a CD myself because it's a great tune. And what's funny about it is I do a show with a friend of mine. His name is Ken Brady. He's the lead singer of a group that was called the Casinos years ago. They had a hit called Then You Can Tell Me Goodbye.
You know? Oh, I love that
yeah,
song.
Yeah, Kiss Me Each Morning. Well, Kenny and I, we do a 90-minute show together, and we always end with Goodnight, My Love. You know, because it's, I mean, you know, it's the obvious thing, but, you know.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah. It's, no kidding. I love that. Then You Can Sit, Tell Me Goodbye. Beautiful record.
Absolutely. So, basically, express yourself. I mean, wherever you go, you hear it. It's been in so many movies. It's been in commercials. You know, it's amazing. You know?
I'm really pleased with it and thankful about it.
So the question I want to ask you, which I ask sometimes because usually people say no to this question, does anybody send you any money once in a while? I hope.
The coffee house. The lines, the cost, the hassle.
Express yourself.
Why not try Coffee Mate? With over 25 delicious flavors for a fraction of the cost of the coffee house. Add your flavor with Coffee Mate from Nestle.
I own it. They have to send me money.
Well, that's great because there's a lot of guys that own stuff and they're not getting their money. So,
I'm the writer and I'm the publisher.
Right, now I hear you.
Yeah, of course, Warner Brothers administrated my publishing for me, which is fine with me and keeps me busy doing stuff and don't have to deal with that. So, yes, and they're honest when they pay. That's one thing about it, so I'm cool.
Yeah, you know, which brings us to another thing in that when you do an interview with somebody and they all of a sudden open up their life, you get to know what the real stuff is and not the real stuff because, you know, there were a lot of stories about everybody in this business and it's very hard to separate the fact from the fiction sometimes. Protect Yourself. That's a campaign that you were involved with. Is that correct?
Yes. I wrote that because Stevie Wonder asked me to write.
Ah.
Well, he wrote and performed this song. It's a classic called Express Yourself. He's taking Express Yourself to new heights with a safe sex message. So to kick off Jeans for Life with an honor to protect yourself, please welcome, bang your hands, welcome to the Greek stage, you two, Olivia, bang your hands together, Mr. Charles Wright.
Stevie Wonder asked him to write this song for the youth. Well, I just want to thank you, Stevie, and say,
and basically, what was that about?
Yeah, he and I dedicated awards by the city of Los Angeles on the same day at the same time in, I think it was 2008. And when we were leaving the city hall, he took me by the arm and told me, asked me to write a song called Protect Yourself to keep the kids from catching AIDS.
Well, you know, they try as hard as they can in the inner city because, like I say, I was a dean for 30 years in a tough school, minority school, and as much as we try to teach them certain things and how to, you know, make better decisions in their lives, they pretty much did what they wanted to do. And I used to say it in the auditorium all the time to parents, I would say, we only receive your kids. You know, they would say, oh, you know, you got my kids all day, man, and they listen to you, and, you know, you got to tell them the right things. I said, you know what? We're not responsible for the mood that they're in when they leave the house. We just open the doors and let them in. So if your kid is not in a good mood when he gets to me, there's not much I'm going to be able to do to turn his life around. You know, you got to keep up the good work in the house. So it takes the parents and the teachers. You know, it's not just I send my kids to the teachers and the teachers are going to send me back a kid that's terrific. You know, you got to send them halfway terrific in order for us to do the magic, you know?
That's your job.
You know,
because to raise their kids.
Yep.
But I wonder why people feel like this.
It takes both. I mean, it really takes both. And even in, you know, in nowadays, you know, the parents want to blame the teachers want to blame the parents. It takes both.
And the kids don't want to listen.
You know, caring parents. Well, you know, let's take it a little bit further. The more liberal we become with our kids to just let them do what they want and no accountability, that's what we're going to get back.
The more out of control everything becomes. I don't know about where you are, but there's a law in California you can't whip your children.
I know. Yep.
God damn, man. That's kind of putting a person in a bad position. You can't whip your own children.
Are you kidding me? We used to have kids, you know, like in junior high school, if their parents yelled at them or smacked them or whatever, they call 911. The kids.
Oh.
The kids.
And not funny.
Well, but, you know, I mean, when you just allow people to do what they want, no matter who it is, no matter what it is, and there's no accountability, and there's no, you do something wrong, there's got to be accountability, man. You know, and the less we have of that, the more it hurts us, you know, and that's, you know, we're talking about how society changed. How do you think the music business has changed since you first dove into the pool?
Do I really have to say that?
Yeah, you know, in a sentence or two, you know.
That is a drastic change.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely drastic. I don't know how we got from Duke Ellington to these rappers.
Well, because we've allowed it. We didn't say nobody, you know, because the record companies were making money and nobody said, ooh, you know, we don't want it. Stop it. Don't do it. They just said, oh, you know what? These kids they're making money. We got these young kids making money and they're making money for the record company or whatever. And we'll do it some more and some more and some more. And it grew and everybody wanted to be a punk and everybody wants to be a gangster. And we all allowed it to happen, you know, it happened, you know, American Idol. Do you watch it once in a while?
I used to. I don't see no reason to watch it now.
What I don't like is to take a kid that had some talent and to stand him next to another kid and pound on him and destroy his confidence and maybe you ruined that kid because he goes home and he says, I'm no good at this. Like what somebody said to you one day. You know, you can't sing, man. You just say, yes, I can. You know, but what about the kid that can't, you know, he gets on national TV and Jennifer Lopez tells him that he can't sing and he goes home and he says, you know what, Mom, I can't sing. You know, so that's the way I think they hurt the kids, you know. Is there anything that you might want to mention or talk about that we haven't talked about as far as Charles Wright is concerned?
No, man, I tell you one thing. You interview very well. You're very thorough.
Thanks. So, Charles, it's been great talking to you, man. I always wanted to get to talk to the guy that touched so many of the doo-wop groups and also was the brains and the original founding member of the Watts Band, and a guy who really over the years has learned how to, as you say, express himself. And I'm glad that you were expressing yourself with me tonight, because it's been great, and I learned a lot more about Charles Wright.
I enjoyed talking to you very much, and I hope we can talk again sometime. Yeah. And I want y'all to remember, I got a book coming out called Up by Charles Wright.
Well, you know what? We'll stay in touch, and when the book comes out, we'll spend a little time and we'll talk about it, and I'll send it out.
Oh, that's great.
So it's cool. There were people who knew you, you know, way at the beginning, and they were fans, you know, of the Watts Band, and they were Charlie Wright fans. And what would you like to say to some of those people that are still around, that are rooting for you, that bought all your records and they're still hanging in there with Charles Wright? What would you like to say to those people?
Well, I'd like to tell them, keep on rooting for me. Thank you very much for rooting for me. And I'm always trying to do something for you with my music. And I appreciate it.
Stay creative, Charles, and I'll talk to you soon, man. Thank you very much.
Thank you. God bless everybody.
A blind boy and his girl were crossing the street one day. And I shuddered as I passed him when I heard him say,
no fun when you're blind.
I'll give you time.
So sweet, every song that they play was designed for you and me. Those are some times I never will forget. I could relive them all and have no regrets. I guess I'll always be a doo-wop man. I like my music. Had me in the palm of your hand. Everything you wish, my command. Suddenly you had a change of heart.
Instead of always using my head,
lonely again.
be hanging around. But when the shoe's on the other foot, they'll let you down. Smile in your face, but it's just another game. You turn your back to scandalize your name. But there's coming a time when they'll be standing alone.
Open up your heart, recall how it used to be, remember all the love we found.
Ooh. On Harmony Street, ooh, there was a place
we
that we used to go,
ooh,
when we were feeling down. We couldn't believe our eyes
when
we were there. Wasn't it a big surprise to find we really cared? We looked into each other's hearts.
Street.
Yes, there were times when we had it all figured out. Then there were times when we both had our doubts. But through it all, you know, our love was complete. We spent all our time on Harmony Street. We couldn't believe our eyes
when
we were there. Wasn't it a big surprise to find we really cared? We looked into each other's eyes. Yes, there were times when we had it all figured out. Then there were times when we both had our doubts. But through it all, you know, our love was complete. We spent all our time on Harmony Street. Nothing I could do, nothing to say. We looked into each other's eyes and found a lonely thoroughfare on Harmony Street.
Open up your heart, recall how it used to be. Remember all the love we found,
ooh, on Harmony Street.
Open up your heart, recall how we used to be.